Hello, and welcome to our program, Senior Living, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Chrissy Mernon. During this next half hour, I'm reading articles from the AARP Bulletin, and this is from their In the News section. Some Medicare premiums to drop. Medicare Part B's standard monthly premium will fall to $164.90 in 2023, a $5.20 decrease from this year. Welcome news after 2022, when the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, hit beneficiaries with the highest ever increase. Part B covers doctor visits, diagnostic tests, and other outpatient services. Most Medicare beneficiaries have Part B premiums deducted directly from their monthly Social Security payments, which will rise next year by 8.7% because of this year's inflation. The 2023 premium decrease makes good on statements earlier this year by Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra. He noted that Medicare spending on Aduhelm, an expensive new Alzheimer's drug, was not going to be nearly as high as expected, generating savings that would be passed on to beneficiaries in 2023. Spending on other Part B services is also projected to be less than anticipated. Today's announcement of lower Part B premiums and deductibles is welcome news for seniors who are struggling with rising costs due to inflation, said Nancy LeMond, AARP Executive Vice President and Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer. There was more good news for Medicare users. The average monthly premium for a Medicare Advantage plan is expected to decrease to $18 in 2023, down nearly 8% from 2022. CMS projects that 31.8 million people will be enrolled in these private insurance plans in 2023. CMS also announced that the average monthly premium for Part D prescription drug plans will decrease slightly from $32.08 this year to $31.50 in 2023. And the annual Part B deductible for 2023 is also decreasing to $226. That is a $7 decline. Social Security urged to improve service. Congress has urged the Social Security Administration to address a flood of customer complaints that have grown even louder in the aftermath of pandemic-related shutdowns. In a recent letter to SSA Acting Commissioner, leaders of the House Ways and Means Committee said many people, some of whom are elderly, have had to wait more than 6 hours to get help. People have had to come back multiple days to get service. Those who called the agency didn't fare any better. In late summer, callers to the national Social Security number waited about 31 minutes on average to speak to an agent, up from 6 minutes a year earlier. Field offices were mostly shut down by COVID for nearly 2 years until April, and they have been struggling since reopening. The commissioner responded with an outline of plans to improve service, but that won't happen overnight. Agency-wide, we are at our lowest staffing level in 25 years, driven by years of insufficient funding, Social Security spokesperson Nicole Tigeman said in an email to AARP. AARP's Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer Nancy LeMond wrote the agency in September to urge improved service. Seniors and those with disabilities simply should not be asked to wait in line outside in inclement weather to get the services they need. Task force calls for routine anxiety testing. A top panel of experts has said for the first time that adults up to age 64 should routinely get screened for anxiety, even people with no symptoms of stress or emotional duress. The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force says such screening could help identify anxiety disorders early. This is, I think, sorely needed and sorely overdue, says Robert Hudak, MD, a psychiatrist at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center Western Psychiatric Hospital. Anxiety disorders are among the most common mental health issues in the United States, with more than 15% of adults reporting symptoms of anxiety in 2019, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and that was before COVID-19. Untreated anxiety can lead to clinical depression and can have an impact on everything from blood pressure to ulcers and chronic pain disorders. The draft recommendations exclude adults 65 and older because there isn't enough evidence to show that the benefits of screening older adults outweigh any potential downsides. One concern is that placing older people on some anti-anxiety drugs can cause side effects like impaired cognition and increased risk of falls, the National Institutes of Health says. The next article from AARP Bulletin is the cover story, Stay Healthy This Winter. COVID lingers, flu season is at hand, and germs are everywhere. Here's how you can reduce your risk by Jessica Magala. If there's one thing we can agree on, it's that nearly 3 years of pandemic living has left us sick of sickness. But as sure as fall leads to winter, so will virus season soon be upon us. COVID-19 variants now outnumber Tom Brady's Super Bowl wins. The flu's latest model is in the showroom, and more than 200 viruses lurking out there are capable of causing the common cold. Here's the thing. You have the power to reduce your risk of getting sick significantly. What's important is to start taking the precautions you need today to reduce your risk of getting a cold, the flu, and COVID, and make it through the winter healthy and safe. So we called up the experts and pressed them to answer some of your most common questions. COVID seems much milder now. Do I still have to worry about it? Yes. While the majority of Americans have gotten COVID at least once, the virus that causes it, SARS-CoV-2, continues to evolve and mutate, sending thousands of people to the hospital every day. No one knows exactly where this bug is headed, says Pangis Galastastos, MD, an assistant professor of pulmonary and critical care medicine at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. He's predicting more cases as the weather cools, with a potential wave of yet another sub-variant of the Omicron variant. You already know the immune system weakens with age, making infections more precarious and recovery time longer. More than 75% of COVID deaths have been in those age 65 and over, a risk that increases if you have underlying medical conditions. But there's another issue to keep in mind. A prolonged recovery time and the bed rest that can go with it puts you at an increased risk for a cadre of complications, from loss of muscle mass and strength to prolonged immobility and falls, leading to a potential downward spiral. That's true for COVID, the flu, and even the common cold. Trying to fight your way back to where you were before can be a tremendous battle, says Magdalena Bednarsik, MD, Section Chief of Geriatric Medicine at Rush University Medical Center. For a fit younger adult, a common cold or the flu could be an inconvenience. For a frail older adult, it can literally knock them off their feet, she says. Bottom line on COVID, it's still out there, it's serious, and it's not alone. Should I get the new COVID booster? And if so, when? For a person 65 and older, being up to date on your vaccinations reduces the likelihood of heading to the hospital by 94%. So yes, you want that booster. And right now is the perfect time for it, assuming you've already had the initial vaccine. The recently introduced booster targets the most contagious of the Omicron subvariants, so adding it to your previous vaccinations is like donning a full bodysuit of immunity armor. And since it's also the right time of year to get your flu vaccine, you can combine them into one simple appointment. I'm just getting over COVID. Should I wait to get the booster? Yes, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, you may consider waiting 3 months from the onset of symptoms or a positive test before getting the booster. That gives your immune system time to reset its own natural defenses before you add the additional protection of the vaccine. If you experienced rebound COVID, wait until 3 months after the return of symptoms or a positive test. However, if you suffer from chronic liver or lung disease, diabetes, heart problems, or other health issues that put you at increased risk, consult your healthcare provider about vaccine timing, says Cameron Wolf, MD, an infectious disease specialist at the Duke University School of Medicine. Will we ever stop needing these shots? Maybe, but the more likely scenario is that COVID boosters become an annual routine. The goal is to get into a pattern that's similar to the once-a-year flu shot, where companies can modify the vaccine to stay up to date on whatever variants are floating around at the time. Ideally, we are looking at a situation where they are combined with the flu shot to make it easy, Wolf says. But we're not there yet because, unlike the flu, COVID is still a year-round threat. How can I help my immune system naturally? There are no injections or vitamins that will produce a supercharged immune system, says infectious disease expert Lawrence Livernese, MD, chairman of the Department of Medicine at Mainline Health System. Not smoking, not drinking excessively, exercising regularly, preventive immunizations, and following a healthy diet are your best bets. That said, a recent study found that our immune system responds more vigorously to both COVID and flu vaccines if we perform 90 minutes of light to moderate intensity exercise about 30 minutes after receiving the vaccine, and there were no reported increases in side effects. While the study was small, it may make sense to plan a long walk or other light intensity movement post-vaccination. Beyond vaccines, what's the latest thinking on protecting myself from COVID? Galeastassos recommends keeping two tools at your disposal, rapid test and well-fitting mask. Testing ahead of holiday gatherings and after exposure can help identify infection so that you don't spread it to loved ones. And while you're probably sick of masks by now, he recommends wearing a tightly fitting one. Those include N95, KN95, or KF94. If you're planning on being out in public for an hour or two, leisurely grocery shopping, or taking public transportation, a quick 10-minute grocery run, slap on a disposable surgical mask, and be on your way. With all this at-home testing, how do we know if COVID is increasing or not? The increase in home testing is already baked into the CDC's estimates of COVID infection numbers, says David Sanimo, MD, Associate Professor of Medicine at Rutgers New Jersey Medical School. But for a truly accurate statistic, look at hospitalization rates. If the number is rising in your region, COVID is on the rise and your caution should be as well. Currently, it's holding steady nationwide. Hospitalizations spike in winter. The U.S. saw a peak of close to 155,000 people hospitalized in January 2022. The previous January, we hit nearly 135,000. I've already had COVID once. Does that make me less likely to get it again? Not fully. Think of COVID as like a supercharged common cold. Coming down with it once doesn't mean you can't get sick again. The virus changes enough over time that the immune response you develop against one version is enough to protect against serious illness, but not from developing another infection, says Stephen Lawrence, MD, Washington University infectious disease specialist at Barnes Jewish Hospital. And every new infection brings new risk of complications, including long COVID. What's the deal with COVID rebounds? When President Biden tested positive over the summer, he was quick to receive the antiviral medication Paxlovid. He recovered, emerged from isolation, and then, whoops, he tested positive again. He was back into isolation. This is called rebound infection. These may occur in roughly 1 in 4 cases. Studies show that Paxlovid does not reduce the risk of rebound infections, but it does greatly reduce the risk of hospitalization and death. A leading hypothesis is that the rebound we're seeing is no different than stopping an antibiotic prematurely and allowing the microbe to come back. The antiviral killed off the amount needed to eliminate the infection, but not all of the virus, so it grew back like a weed, Galeastassos says. Importantly, though, it doesn't mean that the drug failed. It's still very effective in preventing serious illness when taken appropriately, Lawrence adds. That said, if your symptoms do come back, you'll have to start your 5-day isolation all over again, according to CDC guidelines. Should I ask for antivirals if I test positive for COVID? Yes. Early treatment with Paxlovid or Lagevrio, another antiviral, can keep individuals out of the hospital and minimize the risk of death, says Thomas Tsai, MD, senior policy advisor for the White House COVID-19 response team. But getting the drugs into the hands of those who are most vulnerable is critical. Historically, we've always seen underutilization of the treatments for our older populations, and this is why older individuals are often the most vulnerable groups, he points out. Our older Americans are, once again, bearing the highest burden of severe outcomes from COVID-19, including higher rates of hospitalization and, unfortunately, death, Tsai says. Reach out to your doctor about antivirals if you suspect COVID. I've heard of flu-rona, or getting sick with the coronavirus and the flu at the same time. Can that really happen? In a study on nearly 7,000 people with COVID in the UK, about 8% of them were sick with the second virus. About half of those cases involved the flu. Patients who had flu-rona were significantly more likely to require ventilation and to die in the hospital. That's another reason to get both the flu vaccine and the COVID booster this year. The looming danger of the upcoming flu season has the CDC on alert, and this year its recommendation is that adults age 65 plus get the higher dose or adjuvanted flu vaccines rather than the standard dose. The flu is a very serious illness in older people, says Nina Blackman, MD, geriatric medicine specialist and assistant professor of medicine at NYU Langone Health. One study in the New England Journal of Medicine found that older adults are 6 times more likely to suffer a heart attack in the 7 days after catching the flu. If I got really whacked by COVID, does that mean I'll be hit hard by the flu too? Not necessarily. Our immune systems are as unique as fingerprints, Lawrence says. Overall, in the absence of another medical condition, lung disease, for example, that leaves you vulnerable to respiratory infections, your response to COVID doesn't predict how you'll handle the flu, and vice versa, he says. The next article from the AARP Bulletin, part of the cover story, your Get Healthy Kit. Before you find yourself sidelined with fever, body aches, coughing, and sneezing, make sure you're fully stocked up on these essentials. COVID tests. Avoid the embarrassment of hacking while standing in line at the pharmacy buying COVID tests. Keep 2 or 3 rapid tests on hand to help you identify if your symptoms are related to COVID. Masks. Whether you have COVID or not, protect yourself and those around you by wearing a mask. N95s, KN95s, or KF94s are best. Acetaminophen. Acetaminophen, Tylenol, is the preferred fever reducer for fighting illnesses, says June McCoy, MD, a geriatrician and professor of medicine at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. Ibuprofen is great for sprains and strains, but in older people it may cause elevated blood pressure, interfere with kidney function, and cause gastrointestinal discomfort. Thermometer. Fever can be a symptom of COVID-19 and the flu, but is less likely for the common cold. Having a thermometer on hand will arm you with important info if you need to call your doctor. Pro tip, purchase a contact thermometer, one used on the forehead or in the mouth or armpit, as contactless forehead thermometers have been shown to miss the majority of fevers. Pulse oximeter. This device, which clips to your fingertip, measures your blood oxygen saturation level and can indicate if your oxygen level is decreasing, necessitating medical intervention. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration warns that these monitors may be less accurate for people with darker skin tones, so talk to your doctor before getting one. If you're experiencing breathing problems, call your healthcare provider. Throat lozenges. Stick with a plain, non-zinc throat lozenge, McCoy recommends. Zinc can alter your sense of smell and taste for several days, she says. Cough syrup, dextromethorphan, Robitussin, is a good option for quieting a pesky cough. You don't want to get rid of a cough completely, as it serves a purpose to clear your airways, McCoy notes. Soup. Keep your soup shelf stocked with several varieties this winter and grab any can when the mood strikes. Soup is hydrating and can help speed the movement of mucus and lessen congestion. The next article from AARP Bulletin, long COVID, very real, very scary. Most bodies fight off a COVID infection in 1 or 2 weeks, but for others, symptoms last for months and can be debilitating. Experts aren't sure what triggers long-haul COVID and how the disease progresses in an individual, and the short and long-term complications are all unclear. Long COVID is not something we expected, Galastasso says. The virus has mutated so much that it infects almost every cell. The inflammatory cascade seen in COVID is new. We're still trying to figure out what all this means. Here's what we know about this mysterious lingering condition. What is it? The World Health Organization defines long COVID as symptoms of the disease, mainly fatigue, shortness of breath, brain fog, that last at least 2 months with no other known cause. In some cases, the symptoms linger continuously from the time of initial illness. In others, the symptoms reemerge after a period of apparent recovery. Who gets it? Estimates vary widely based on the population being studied and the time period being looked at. Having a milder initial case seems to help stave it off, while those who are hospitalized have a greater risk. Research in PLOS 1 found that people who had at least 6 COVID symptoms were more likely to endure long COVID. One really big risk factor? Being unvaccinated. Why should I worry? One study last year in The Lancet found that nearly half of long COVID sufferers had to reduce their everyday workload, and almost one quarter couldn't work at all due to enduring symptoms. More worrisome, recovery took more than 8 months. Other research in The Lancet Psychiatry found that people are more at risk for being diagnosed with a neurological or psychiatric condition such as depression, anxiety, or dementia in the first 6 months after being diagnosed with COVID. It is serious. What do I do if I think I have it? If you've shaken off COVID but symptoms linger after 2 to 4 weeks, it may still be your body's healing process. Longer than that, see your doctor. Diagnosis can be a struggle because there is no test for long COVID. Doctors will try to exclude all the other reasons for your symptoms first. If the fatigue or brain fog is not going away after 6 months and we can't pin another disease on those symptoms, that's when I start thinking long COVID, Galastasso says. Getting this confirmation can be particularly fraught for older adults who may be told that slowing down and feeling tired or foggy is all part of the aging process. It's not, and you don't have to accept that explanation. You should feel heard by your care team. What can I expect if I really do have it? The difficult reality for long haulers, as they're called, is that long COVID has no cure. Treatment involves helping people adjust to their life as it is now, how to manage extreme tiredness or compensate for memory problems. At least 66 hospitals around the country run post-COVID clinics, and more are no doubt to come. But even if yours doesn't, you should be referred to a cadre of specialists such as a physical therapist or neuropsychologist. When it comes to each individual patient, Galastasso says he cannot tell them what the future holds. Some people improve and feel better, others plateau and adjust to their new life, and some get worse and suffer greatly because they can hardly recognize themselves anymore. What is the best defense against long COVID? Being vaccinated and doing everything you can to avoid catching it in the first place. The next article from AARP Bulletin is from the Fraud Watch section. The art of deceit. Scammers use these 7 tactics to get between you and your sense of reason, by Christina Inizzo. Many people believe they are too smart to be taken in by a scam, but they miss the key point. Scammers mostly bypass your intellect and rely on sophisticated psychological and emotional manipulations to get you to say yes. You don't have to be a fool to be fooled, says Robert Cialdini, author of Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. These people are using tactics and strategies that all of us are susceptible to. Specifically, he explains, they weaponize universal human instincts such as fear of loss, love, and trust in others. Here are some of their techniques. They establish camaraderie. So sorry to hear about the loss of your husband. You know, my own wife passed away last year as well. It's been hard. The trick, scammers will parrot back the target's religion, political affiliation, military background, or life situation to get the target to feel he's just like me, Cialdini notes. Then we tend to lower our defenses and are much more likely to follow their lead. They play on your aversion to loss. You've won the sweepstakes. You are now rich. But if you don't act fast, the trick? Many people have a deep-seated fear of missing out, FOMO in internet jargon, on good opportunities, given how infrequently they appear. The criminal encourages that FOMO, Cialdini says. They do it in terms of the uniqueness of the idea or the dwindling availability of the product or service. This spooks people into choices. They flatter you. I can tell you know a lot about finance, so you know how much money you can make in cryptocurrency if you manage the risks. The trick, usually at the beginning, it's a lot of love bombing, says Anthony Pratt Canis, emeritus professor of psychology at the University of Southern California, Santa Cruz. They'll frequently praise the victim, Cialdini says. That lends itself to a sense of connection and trust. If this person likes me, well, then I can trust this person. They make you feel anxious. This malware means your bank account has been compromised. Someone could steal it from it very easily now. The trick? We live in this age of anxiety where there are so many actual existential fears, AARP fraud expert Doug Shadle says. It's pretty easy to get people to say, all right, what do I have to do to make this one go away? They create instant terror. Grandpa, help, I've been arrested and need money for bail right away. The trick, when you're afraid, the emotional part of your brain takes over the cognitive part of your brain, Shadle says. That's what they want. When your emotions kick in, it swaps out the logic. In such moments of powerful emotion, you are far more likely to think you hear a loved one's voice and to fall for a scam. They seduce you. I love talking to you. I have not felt so close to someone in so long. The trick? In a romance scam, as in a real love relationship, you'll have reciprocating self-disclosures, Pratt Canis explains. I'll tell you a little bit about me. In return, you tell me a little bit about you. And as we go further down the path, we say more intimate things, and that creates a sense of closeness, even love. They intimidate you. I'm with the police. You've missed jury duty again. Either pay a $900 fine now or go to jail. The trick? They present themselves as a feared authority, say a cop, IRS officer, or Medicare rep. Technology makes it easy now to pretend to be someone you're not, Shadle says. Criminals can program their caller ID so it says San Diego Sheriff's Office. How to stay rational when scammers rattle you. Monitor your reaction to calls from strangers. Do you feel heated? Is your pulse rising? Are you getting angry or anxious? If the answer is yes, get out of the situation immediately. Simply say, I won't do this by phone. Send a letter. Goodbye. Then hang up. Recenter yourself. Leave the room, take 10 deep breaths, and ask yourself questions that you know the answers to, such as, what color is grass? Look at the situation like a scientist, as though you're observing someone else in the same position. Never make an immediate impulse buying decision. Wait at least 24 hours to allow emotions to subside before making a purchase. Get advice from a person you trust and respect. Merely discussing the situation out loud helps bring rationality back. You have been listening to Senior Living on Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 this evening. I'm Chrissy Mernon, saying goodbye from Al Radio.